Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holiday install to get started. Lowe's, we help, you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.
Well, this one's a real twisty-turny.
I know.
So much happens in this one. This is a bonkers episode.
And there's an actual puzzle. I can't stress how much I love that.
Are you a puzzle person?
No, but I love that Clint is.
Yeah. Okay, great. Hi, Julian Pensavalli.
Hello, Patrick Hines.
Girl, we got to jump right in because we've got an announcement.
What is it?
So, fam, we promised you a Facebook group alternative.
Yes.
Right? So we are launching a Discord, and
yes,
we are very excited about this. Now, I know very little, though I'm getting up to speed quickly.
Yeah, we're both in there.
Yeah, we're both in there. There's a link in the show notes to sign up for the Discord. We'll put it in the Facebook group as well. It's going to be heavily moderated by Sash and a couple of other people that we're bringing in. It's just another place for you to go and sort of like hang out. And the way that I understand that it works is like it's more like channel than one like big group feed. So if you want to talk about the book club, for example, there's a book club channel. If
right,
you want to talk about this week's episode, there's a this week's episode channel. If you want to talk about dogs, there'll
yeah,
be a dogs
there'll
channel.
There'll be like a pets channel.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
Too.
So everyone, if you're into that kind of thing, great. We just wanted an alternative
yeah,
place for community and for everyone to hang out.
And like the Facebook group is going nowhere. I love the Facebook group. I will be in there all the time still. But it's, you know, this is just another place. I will be in both of them. But the Discord exists and
yeah,
I cannot wait to like grow and learn together.
It's a brand new day.
Brand new day.
So join us, won't you? Or not. Whatever.
Oh,
whatever you want to do.
You're not bullying
it's
anybody.
Up to you.
You're just inviting
it's
them
up
nicely.
To you. I'm trying my best. Come hang.
Girl, what are we talking about today?
So this is an episode of 2020. It's called A Puzzling Murder. It is about the murder of Leta McClinton.
This is a true murder mystery. Emphasis on murder, emphasis on mystery.
I felt like Leta's murder case looks like a true crime story, but it goes a lot deeper.
Who would kill this woman? She wasn't robbed. Somebody came to the door with roses and shot her dead.
Was there a feeling that this had to be pretty calculated?
She was shot with a 9mm semi-automatic handgun.
No obvious suspect.
Was she at all concerned about the fact that she was in an interracial marriage and that this was a difficult time in the South?
It was not a welcoming place for a black woman to live.
She said, I'm done. I'm packing up my stuff.
I want you to see the puzzle. When I put it together and I show it to you, you'll never forget it.
Your wife's best friend has been murdered, and police are looking at you.
So we get all the details of this crime really quickly and sort of right up front. So we learn it's a cold, drizzly Atlanta morning in 1987. Leta McClinton is asleep in her gorgeous townhouse. Her best friend Poppy and Poppy's daughter are also there. They're asleep in another room. And then a little after 8 in the morning, the doorbell rings and Leta goes down to answer it. She looks through the peephole and she sees a delivery person with a huge box of flowers. We're told she might not have answered the door were it not for the flowers, but as soon as she opens the door to take the flowers, this delivery person pulls a gun and shoots her twice in the head.
And now her BFF Poppy is at the house with her 3-year-old daughter, so she hears this.
Yeah.
There's a neighbor who sees a guy running out of the housing complex, and the neighbor calls 911. This neighbor ends up being incredibly important in the story.
Yes.
And when the cops arrive, this is so heartbreaking.
That police officer ends up holding Leta's hand. They thought Leta was completely unconscious, and yet she managed to squeeze his hand as he kept comforting her and telling her everything was going to be okay. And he said it was her comforting him.
She was doing that to comfort me.
Ugh.
Knowing she was dying, like just her last moments, and she was just like in this like selfless.
Just a compassionate.
Exactly.
Kind
exactly.
Now, Leta is rushed to the hospital. The doctors could not save her, and Leta dies 30 minutes later. Now, M. Yvette Miller is here, and she's Lita's friend. She will be with us throughout. She's
yeah,
awesome.
She's amazing.
And she says the thing about Leta is that she drew people in. She had a lot of friends. She was a great person.
Yeah.
She was really, really big in the community.
Everyone loves her. I mean, it's one of those where we get just a round table of everybody celebrity that we're going to meet. Everyone just has nothing but glowing, nice things to say about her.
And Lita lived in the exclusive Buckhead neighborhood in Atlanta.
Yeah, that neighborhood is beautiful.
It's like all mansions. It's a very rich area. We're told like shootings just don't happen here.
So the neighborhood is on edge because remember, now there's a mad shooter on the loose.
Who ran away out of the complex. And we're like, what?
In broad daylight. That always gets me.
I know. So here's the evidence at the scene. There's a bullet fragment. There are two shell casings, and the box of roses is actually really important because two shots from a 9mm gun went through the box of roses.
Yeah, and you know, the story is obviously all over the news. It's like a shooting and a murder in this like really wealthy suburb. You know, it's just horrible. It's all over the news. We meet Deb Miller Landau. This woman wrote the book on this case.
Yeah.
And she is pretty sassy throughout. Like, I kind of love when we come back to Deb.
The book is called A Devil Went Down to Georgia.
Yeah, but like this case is really personal to her because she's been covering it, you know, since 2004, which remember, this crime happened in 1988.
Yes.
And she's covering it in 2004, and she's so deep into the story that she writes a book about it. And she, you know, obviously she didn't know Lita, but she feels very personally connected to her.
Yeah, she spoke to everyone that Lita knew. So yeah, it feels personal.
But this is where we learn that prosecutor Clint loves puzzles. Tell us everything, Jimmy.
Okay, Clint Rucker is here. He's a former ADA in Fulton County. This case is very personal to him also, but he loves puzzles, and this actually helps him with his work as a prosecutor.
Yeah.
And I love this so much because he's here with this big puzzle on his desk, and he's like putting the pieces together
talking to Deborah Roberts.
Right, Deborah Roberts is covering this case.
I love
and
her.
He's explaining to her like how the puzzles connect him to his job. Cannot stress.
It's so
how much
puzzles
I love this.
Are the thing I think that I will love. We once got a 1,000 piece puzzle, and we have this chest of drawers in our hallway.
Okay,
and I decided I was gonna like just put all the pieces out there, and Daisy and I were gonna slowly do it over weeks. About 3 months later, Steve just like swooped it all into the trash.
Okay, it's enough already. 3 weeks. If you don't have a dedicated table to it, it's too much.
My mom used to do puzzles and then glue them to like things and hang them on the wall.
No, you know what? Good. She worked hard on them.
She's a lesbian. You know, we were wanting for art taste in our house growing up.
Worked hard on it. I say great. Put up those puzzles.
Which is not to say that lesbians can't have amazing taste in art, because I know that that is true. But in our home, we did not believe in taste in art.
The apple does not fall far.
That's exactly right. Thank you so much.
Brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible. Financial geniuses. Monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it. So your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
So Clint says in both cases and puzzles, he says,
when I'm putting together a puzzle, not only in real life, but also a murder case, I make an assessment about what it is I'm working with. I start to identify pieces of the puzzle that are foundational.
He identifies the pieces that are foundational.
Yes.
That's how he works with puzzles. That's how he works with his cases.
All right,
it's
do
all
it, Clint.
The same.
Don't fuck us on this, Clint.
And he doesn't.
I know.
But he tells us, look, there was a lot of pressure on Lita. And he says, black women need to be exceptional in order to be seen.
Yeah.
It was the case when Lita was growing up in the 50s and 60s. It was the case when she was murdered in the 80s. And it is still the case today.
It is. And it shouldn't be the case. But guess what? Lita's parents are also exceptional.
They are.
You know what I mean? They shouldn't have to be, but they just happen to be.
Yeah, because we learned, like, Deborah Roberts grew up in Georgia, so
yes.
This case is personal to her, too. Like, everyone sitting here either spent a lot of time on this case, or it means a lot to them, or it's happening in their hometown like Deborah Roberts.
Yeah, so Lita's parents are Emery and Joanne McClinton. They were both, quote, power players. Emery was on the State Board of Transportation. Joanne was in the state legislature. She would talk about, like, interpersonal meetings she'd had with Martin Luther King. Like, she was in the room with him when he was, like, leading meetings.
Yeah, and like Deborah Roberts says, she explains that in the 70s, where she grew up, this place was still emerging from the shadows of segregation and racial tension.
Yes.
And lawyer Clint says, like, this was a time, Atlanta in the 70s, like, this was a time where some black people were, he uses the word, ascending in social circles and professionally. This was the case for Lita's parents.
Yeah. Lita grew up going to cotillions, like, very posh and upper class. I was like, we had a different growing up experience, Lita.
Cotillions.
I was not invited to a single cotillion,
yeah.
In fact.
Joanne, Lita's mom, was Maynard Jackson's campaign manager when he ran for mayor and won.
He was the 54th mayor of Atlanta.
So yeah, she's in very important rooms. They're both, they call them like power players and like movers and shakers in Atlanta in the 70s.
And but like there's got to be a lot of pressure growing up their daughter, right? So like that was like she was very happy and well-adjusted. Her parents like loved her. But, you know, there was expectation on her. Her family really wanted her to go into politics. She was not interested.
Right. And the timing is really important. It's
yes.
the 70s. The civil rights movement was like yesterday.
Right. Exactly. So her mom knew Martin Luther King.
So it's all like there's a lot of pressure for Lita to like continue the legacy of this family.
Yeah. Well, she goes to Spelman College.
After high school, she went on to Spelman College. Her parents sort of hoped that she would enter the political arena like they were, but she was very much into fashion.
She wants to go into fashion, and she has got a job working at a boutique in Lenox Square.
Right, and this boutique is where she meets Jim Sullivan.
Yeah.
And he's a white guy. He's about 10 years older. She's 24 years old at the time.
Yeah.
But everyone says she was just totally smitten.
And they describe, like, how he just showered her with, like, gifts and attention. Like, he just, like, zoomed in on her, like, the second he met her.
Love bombed her.
Love
bombed
her. Big time.
We didn't have that term in the 70s,
yeah.
but that's what we're dealing with here.
Yeah, and, you know, another difference they explained between them was class. Like, she was raised in Atlanta society. He was raised on, quote, the gritty streets of Boston's South Side. Nobody calls it the South Side. It's Southie.
He's from Southie.
Right,
went to Holy Cross, got a degree in economics, and
yeah.
people are saying, like, all of that is fine.
Yeah,
like, that's
great.
Not bad.
Right.
But
you hate Holy Cross.
No, my best friend went to Holy Cross. I spent many a weekend there.
Did you really?
Yeah, in Worcester.
Oh, my God.
Come on now.
I know Holy Cross.
I am worldly.
It's Worcester,
and wise.
By the way.
Worcester.
Worcester.
But it's spelled like Worcester. I know.
I know.
So all that is fine. But we learn very early he always wanted to be a rich person.
Yes.
So that might have been part of the reasons where he like set his sights on Lita because she was this high class
yeah,
lady.
Yeah, and clearly was a girl who came from money. But this guy inherits a thriving liquor distributorship from his uncle worth $3.2 million. I said, what in the monopoly?
Yeah, right.
Uncle dies, leaves you $3.2 million in booze.
Crown,
doesn't get better.
Crown beverages.
Well, suddenly he's got money.
And he's like, great, my dream has come true. He was just handed all of this
and
money. He didn't work for it.
Can I tell you, I did the conversion of like, what, $3.2 million from 1970 to 2025. That's like $40
million.
That's crazy. So like, that is an insane, it's the buying power of $40 million today.
And it's also, it was a thriving business. So there was room
booze.
To grow.
You can't go wrong.
No.
Why did we do this instead of opening a liquor store? Should we open a liquor store?
No.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Come on.
Yeah. I think we should leave it to the professionals.
What would we call it?
I don't know. Any number of our bar names. I'd rather go into the bar business than the
yeah.
liquor. The liquor store is like, that's like what you get on your way to the fun part.
I guess.
The liquor store is like.
We'll call our liquor store the fun part.
The fun part.
And that's what our liquor store is going to be called.
Are you going to work the register?
Maybe.
Okay,
I'm good with customers.
That's true. You are.
You know what I mean?
Now, Lita's parents are not thrilled.
So when the McClintons met Jim for the first time, they were like, who is this guy? He had this kind of manner that was very uncouth and brash. And they were sort of mystified about what their daughter saw in him.
He's a dirtbag from the jump. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he's got a look, and I will give it to the guy. He's got a great head of hair. He's
whatever.
Got, look, I'm not, like, this is not a sexualization. Like, this is a me wishing I had hair like this. There are those older, there are those men who never lose their hair, and he's one of those guys. That's the only thing he's got going for
him. Well, Lita was an incredibly smart and successful woman, and he turned on the charm for her.
Yes.
It was there for him to turn on, but her
yes.
parents really did not like him.
Yes.
And Deborah Roberts is like, uh-huh. There's also the issue of race, which
right.
cannot be ignored, because she's like, yes, everyone was watching TV's first interracial couple on the Jeffersons.
Yeah.
But I looked this up. The New Georgia Encyclopedia says, by 1965, sweeping federal civil rights legislation prohibited segregation and discrimination. And this new phase of race relations was first officially welcomed into Georgia by Governor Jimmy Carter in 1971. This is the 70s now.
Yeah.
This just happened.
Well, they're going to say at some point in here that it was only 10 years before that the law banning interracial marriage was struck down.
Right. So, like, this was happening in 1971. We're in the 70s now,
yeah.
like, and we're in Georgia. I know it's Atlanta, but like, there's still a lot here. And Deborah Roberts really hits that point home. Like, race is a factor here.
Which, well, and of course, but like, and it would be a factor today, even. You know what I mean? But it would be one thing if they like loved each other and like, they, like he was like in it, didn't care, was gonna fight the fight. You know, he's just a dirtbag. He's just not like that.
And the thing is, everything is fine. Like, no one knows that yet, except
yeah.
for Lita's parents because they clocked him. But when Jim proposes to Lita, her parents are like, "You can't marry this man. Please please don't marry him. But Lita says yes.
Yeah, and like to her parents' credit, they don't do any of that like cutting her out of the will, throwing her out of the family.
What are you going to do? You know, like, and he's charming enough, I guess, sometimes, but they're like, there's something off about this guy.
Yeah.
And everything's going fine, except the night before her wedding, Jim drops like 7 major bombs on Lita.
He tells Lita that he has been married before and that he has 4 children. Lita was shocked.
And then, the very same night, Jim Sullivan blindsides his bride-to-be again.
He whips out a piece of paper and he says, can you sign this? And then she looks down and sees that he's drawn up a prenuptial agreement.
He presents Lita with a prenup.
Yes.
And it says that if they ever got divorced, Lita would get nothing.
Right.
This is the night before their wedding. Everything is paid for. Everything is set up. She's getting married in hours. And he springs all of this on
her. She's had to fight her family in order for this wedding to happen. Like, Lita is all in. She's leading with her heart. She also doesn't fucking need his money. You know what I mean?
Right. And it's like all of the... He was trying to hide the red flags for all this time. And hours before they get married, he, like, shows her all the red flags. And he trapped her. And it worked because she gets married the next day.
Right. By the way, the 4 kids that we never meet.
Or hear about ever again.
Anything about. I'm like, are they even real?
I mean, probably. I'm sure this other woman like,
I guess
ran
it's like
the hills.
Not a fake lie that you make up to like to
mean,
see if she'll stick around.
Like, oh, God.
I know. 4 kids. Can
like
you,
the night before the wedding?
If Ryan Phillippe dropped that on me, I would have some questions.
Wow.
I'm not sure I'd go through with it.
That's serious.
If I'm being Ryan
you
Phillippe.
You know it's serious.
Another one of those guys with that head of hair he's never going to lose.
Well, we'll see.
You know what I mean?
We'll see what happens. They get married. In 1976, Lita's mother would eventually describe that day as the worst
day
of her life. And I mean, I think even that was the case regardless of what happened to Lita.
Yeah.
I think they just hated him so much and they knew this was wrong for her and he trapped her.
Well, not only did he trap her, he then moves her away from her family.
So he moves her to Macon, Georgia, 80 miles away from Lita's home in Atlanta. And like, things are very different in Macon, Georgia. They did not get the civil rights memo. I think it got lost in the mail.
And it's like a very wealthy neighborhood called Shirley Hills. It's, quote, the white part of Macon, Georgia. And so, like, Lita gives up her job and her income. He doesn't want her working. But
remember what the prenup said.
Exactly. Then she, like, exactly. But also,
Joanna and Emery McClinton feared for their daughter. Being part of an interracial couple in Macon, Georgia in the 1970s would have been extraordinarily challenging. The neighbors were like, you have the gall to bring a black wife to Shirley Hills. People threw garbage on their doorstep.
Garbage on their doorstep. Garbage.
Like, these ignorant townspeople made it very clear that they were bigots and racist and that Lita wasn't welcome there. Imagine how scary and lonely that must have been for her.
Especially when you're at home all day with nothing to do. Like, she doesn't have a job. She's not raising the kids. Like she's just sitting around the house in a neighborhood where people hate her.
Yeah. Well, Lita's too awesome and she makes friends anyway.
Yeah.
Like Yvette.
Brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible. Financial geniuses. Monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it. So your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
So Yvette Miller is here, though.
Yes.
And she says, and with no shade at all, really, she's like, here's the thing. Lita could never pay for lunch. Yvette was always picking up the tab. And the reason she's saying that is because they were rich.
Right.
Like, Lita could 100% afford lunch with Yvette.
Yes.
But why didn't, like, Yvette's like, why didn't she ever have access to all this money? Like, that is a major red flag for her because he had the money.
And she doesn't have a job.
And so she's like, why wasn't he giving her any access to this money so that we could go for lunch?
And then we learn how cheap VP was. This guy, he's a millionaire. But Deb, the author, who is like particularly bothered by this because it's awful
well,
and disgusting.
Well, it's the worst kind of cheapo the when you're rich.
Exactly.
To be a cheapo when you're rich.
He would wear, remember, he inherited his business from his dead uncle. He's wearing his dead uncle's clothes everywhere.
Instead of buying a new suit, he's wearing his dead uncle's old suits.
And then
and
this.
And not for like, oh, I'm, it's like, don't, it's not charming. Don't, no, no. It's not a good thing.
No.
This guy's an asshole.
No. He would also use the plastic wrap from dry cleaning as saran wrap for food in the kitchen.
Like, what?
Like, imagine unwrapping your dry cleaning and being like, I'm going to save. Even Steve Tipton doesn't do this.
Even Steve. And you know.
And you know.
What's the most out of bounds where you were like, Steve, girl, really?
Oh, okay. I mean, I've broke him mostly. And to be fair to Steve, I came into our marriage way more broken than
sure.
He fixed me in a lot of ways. But like breaking him of the cheapness, where it's like, we're not going to drive 45 minutes out of the way to avoid a $5 toll, you know?
At what cost?
At
that point, you're paying. I know tolls are ridiculous, but sometimes you just got to pay for the convenience to just go somewhere in a straight line.
You know what else he does? Oh, I hate this. And he's taught Daisy to do it. They pick up change off the street.
Okay. No.
Not to spend, I guess, but like,
to like put it in a little coin container
maybe,
and then cash
like,
it in.
I've just seen Daisy pick up pennies. I'm like, where did you learn that? She's like, Daddy does it. I was like, oh my God.
Steve.
I know.
It's a whole new layer.
I love my husband so much, but oh my God.
It's a little bit, the dry cleaning thing is saran wrap. It's like the little close. It's adjacent. It's close enough.
You know what my mom did for years?
What?
She saved every sauce she ever got with takeout. We would have like hot mustard from 5 years ago in like the, in a Tupperware in the cabinet.
Like from Chinese food and hot mustard.
Tell me your parents did one weird gross thing.
Yeah, the hot mustard, all the condiments from Chinese food, definitely there was like a little baggie in the fridge for sure. Because sometimes it's easier than buying like the enormous jar of mustard, of the hot mustard.
Or like the soy sauce you're going to use twice a year.
Oh no, soy sauce we always have to have.
Oh, really?
The Kiko Man low sodium, I'll die on this hill. We always have it. And when we're kind of running low, it's like Frank's hot sauce too.
Oh my God.
If we're kind of running low, I'm like, Mike, write it down. We got to put it on our list now. I will never, it's ranch.
Yeah.
Frank's hot sauce and Kiko Man low sodium. Those are the condiments I need.
One,
and ketchup and mustard. I'm a big condiment person. A big into sauces.
Are you a ketchup girly?
Oh, for sure.
I love ketchup too.
In what way?
Well, I just thought ketchup is disgusting if you think about it.
I don't care.
I know, me either, but it really is gross. But like, it's gross. I just can't imagine, like, I don't know, you're fancy. I didn't think that, like.
How did ketchup hurt you? How do we live in a world where ketchup, like, offended you in some way? What happened to you?
I think it's because I'm from Massachusetts and we, like, put ketchup on everything.
Okay.
But if you think about what ketchup is, it's like tomato paste and sugar and water. It's so gross.
It's delicious.
I know. It's really
It's good. Just fine.
You know what? I feel better about myself having
had
this conversation.
I'm so glad I was able to help.
I know. Anyway, moving on.
Okay.
He had her on a $150 per week allowance.
Right. So just to recap, he's mean to her because Yvette's like, he wasn't nice to her also. So he's mean to Lita. He's financially abusing her. He's a cheap weirdo and he's cheating on her on a regular basis, we learned.
Yes.
Because 1 year, a Christmas card comes. This idiot. A Christmas card comes.
A Christmas card came addressed to Jim. She opened it. A woman wrote in something like, I'm missing your kisses. The woman's return address was on the envelope, so Lita went and spoke to her, and the woman said that she had been having an affair with Jim.
This idiot put a return address on it.
Siobhan knew what she was doing.
And
you know what I mean?
Goes to find her and like ask her a whole bunch of questions about what are you doing writing love notes on Christmas to my husband?
I know.
Tracks her down.
But I mean, like, that lady knew. She did that on purpose.
Of course.
You know.
For the plot or whatever.
By the way, people who are cheating with like the married guy, he's never going to leave her for
no
you.
No one leaves anybody.
Nobody ever leaves anybody.
It's like, not like I have any experience with that at all. It's just a thing I've heard. It's a thing I've heard people say in movies. Like, he is never going to leave.
They're never going to leave.
No. But anyway, so Lita tracks down this woman.
I'm just saying, by the way, Ryan Phillippe, I will leave my husband.
Okay, great. I think that you've been on the record for quite some time.
Clear.
He knows. If he wanted to, he would, kind of thing at this point. He knows. So,
but I will leave him.
I know.
Okay.
No, we know.
Okay.
So Lita tracks down this woman, confirms that Jim's been cheating on her, and gets the hell out of Macon, Georgia, and she goes home to be with her parents in Atlanta, and her parents are like, thank God.
This is one
here.
Of the things I love the most about her. She's not sticking around to ask questions. She's just like, fuck this, I'm out of here.
No, and she goes back to her parents, who of course are like, thank God, we've been waiting for this phone call. Whatever, like, I'm sorry that this man is a piece of shit, but I'm like, they're just happy she's home.
Yes.
They just wanted her to be home.
But it doesn't last because he lures her back. He just writing this sentence turned my skin.
Turned something. You. Turned your stomach.
Thank you. He increased her allowance to $300. Her allowance. Now, that is $2,400 in today money. But, like, don't give her an allowance. Like, you know what I mean? Right. Like, she's, like, your partner.
Well, I'm going to...
give her a credit card and don't ask any questions, Steve.
I'm going to make you really... Come on, Steve. I'm going to make you really sick now.
Oh, God.
Because, but, in the event of a divorce...
It still shows that all of their assets belong to Jim.
That's right. The successful business, Lita's Mercedes, multiple properties, even her jewelry, still belong to her husband in the event of a divorce.
But in an attempt at reconciliation, Lita signs the postnup.
We didn't mention that he would buy her jewelry when she would find out about the affairs as a way to keep her, but that jewelry is still in his name according to the postnuptial agreement.
Are you kidding
me? Can you imagine?
So a few months later...
And she signs it.
I know. And a few months later, without Lita's knowledge, this guy sells the liquor company for $5 million.
Equivalent to $40 million in today money.
And then he goes, oh, guess what? We're moving. We're moving to Palm Beach, Florida.
Now... He is the worst piece of shit in the world. To not be like, I don't understand how this, you don't have a conversation with your partner about your major life.
About
you know
how
what I mean?
You're moving farther away from her security system or people. He's isolating her.
Right.
We've been through this a million times because she went home with her parents. And I'm sure, like, this is what always happens. She probably, like, sort of started seeing things a little clearly.
Uh-huh.
And that's always a problem for these assholes and these abusers, because, like, oh, she was, like, back home, people she loved, like, maybe, like, some reason was starting to creep in, and now he has to take her even farther away.
Right, and so they move to Palm Beach. We see the house. It's called Casa Alita.
I have so much tea on the house.
You do?
Yes.
Because all we know from the doc is it's 17,000 square feet, 8 oceanfront bedrooms, and their own private beach. Like, the house looks incredible.
This house is very, very, very famous.
It is?
So everyone in Palm Beach knows about this house.
Because of this case?
No. It was built in 1928. It's nicknamed, I'll wait till you're stopping taking this up. It's nicknamed the Ham and Cheese House because of the colors of the bricks.
How did you know my nickname in high school?
Ham and Cheese. Because of the colors of the bricks, everyone knows, like, oh my God, the famous Ham and Cheese House.
Oh my God.
But this house was famous when this piece of shit bought it.
It really?
It was, like, it was famous. So he did a lot of, I'm not even going to say to his credit, but Jim did a lot of careful and important restorations to the house.
Oh, interesting.
And when I Googled it, it said that his sensitive restoration of the property in the early 80s was among the reasons this piece of shit was named to the town's then relatively new Landmarks Preservation Commission, for which he eventually served as chairman.
Oh my God.
This house was granted landmark protection by the town in December of 1979. So this house.
Wow.
So it was sold in 2013 for about $16 million.
Wow.
A couple from Connecticut, a part-time Palm Beach couple.
Of course.
They have $16 million to drop on a historical landmark. They're only there part-time.
I mean, just to zoom in on that for a second, because my mom did housing her entire life, for people who couldn't get housing.
Yeah.
Like, I grew up on Cape Cod. The number of vacant homes on Cape Cod, two-thirds of the year, the number of unhoused people in this country that need a fucking place to live.
I know.
It is just unconscionable.
I've been thinking about that too after lockdown when like so many people went remote, so many people went virtual, like all of these empty vacant buildings, like, can we convert them and sort of do something with the housing crisis, please?
There are families living on the street.
But what's interesting about this house, too, is that it seems to sell, like, every 10-ish years.
Oh, interesting.
So stay tuned.
Yeah.
It sold 12 years ago. So I don't know. It is, like, but it's a landmark. It's an official landmark.
Yeah.
This piece of shit did a lot of, like, you kind of go in there and then just have it decorated and then photographed. It's like, it's a thing.
Uh-huh.
It's like a commodity, not just, like, a place to live in and, like, be a home.
Yep.
It's sort of like it's an asset.
Yep. I
which
totally
all property
understand
is,
that.
But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, when you Google it, it'll be a lot of articles with a lot of professional photos, and the designer will be interviewed about their inspiration for the design.
Oh my God.
It's just one of those houses.
What made you look it up?
Because it's called Casa Alita, I was like, if it's named something, there's got to be something to it. And oh my God, down the rabbit hole did I fall.
Brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible. Financial geniuses. Monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it. So your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
So anyway, still, even though this was like a super rich place, we learn, quote, this was not a welcoming place for a Black woman to live.
No. And it's like Jim very much wants to be a part of the Palm Beach social elite. So learning that he got to be the chairman of the Historical Society or whatever, like that's exactly what he wants. But
it was not a welcoming place for a Black woman to live. And when he found out that to sort of scale the level of social plateau he was looking at in Palm Beach, having a Black wife was a serious impediment to that.
He starts leaving her at home and to these like socialite events, which, by the way, Lita would be an incredible asset at because she's smart and she's charming and she grew up in this life. But because everyone is so fucking racist down there that her being a Black woman was a problem, quote, Jim ditches her, leaves her at home and starts dating Suki Rogers, who is a Korean-born socialite.
Yeah.
Which is, again, to say, it's not that it was interracial, it was that Lita was Black.
Exactly. Now, Suki, they describe as beautiful with a spicy personality. I have since updated my Instagram bio. Just
to,
because it felt suiting.
She walked so you could run, is what you're trying to say. Now, they're dating. He's still married to Lita.
Yes.
And he has enough money to do these very sensitive restorations to this historical house even then.
Yeah.
And Lita can't pay for lunch with a friend.
Exactly. Exactly. So, and by now, they've been married for 10 years.
Now, so after 10 years of the shitty marriage, Lita finds a bra in their bed and she's fucking done.
Are you going to say what Deb said or should I say it?
You can say it.
It was the bra that broke the camel's bed.
Great job, Deb. I get it.
Deb. Like, Deb, she's been working on this story for 25 years. Like, God love her.
This is very Beth Karras of you, Deb.
Totally. It's the bra that broke the camel's bed.
I know. So she finds this bra and she's like, you know what? I'm done. So she goes back to Atlanta and the very next day she files for divorce.
God love her. Yes. Yeah.
So the husband, of course, fights her every step of the way. He makes this a nightmare for her.
Because remember, he had a prenup and a postnup. Everything that she owns is his.
So she's going to divorce court to contest this.
Yes.
And I think she has a good case considering this cheap bastard was cheating on her the entire time and
100%.
Flaunting his money around, restoring this like famous house and cheating on her in public, being photographed with these socialites. Like, I think she has a good case.
No question. And it's January 16th, 1987. That is the date. That's the court date. And she's thinking she's going to walk away with up to like $1 million in cash, and which is $2.7 million.
And the thing that I think is really important to say, all Lita wants to do is move on.
Yes.
All she wants is her things.
Yes.
Her house that she had before him, her jewelry, her car that she had before. And she just wants to move on. She wants him. Like, he's making this a nightmare because that's what abusers do.
Right.
She just wants to be done.
She's not
fighting to fight. She just wants her things and she wants to go back home.
And this is when we learn this is the day that Lita is killed. It's the day of the court hearing where she's taking him to divorce court to like get a moving on money.
The judge was going to decide the settlement that day.
Yes.
So obviously the husband is the first and main suspect.
He stands to gain everything.
Everything. Property, money, assets, everything.
Yeah.
Now the cops go down to Florida to speak to him.
Because remember, she was killed in Atlanta.
Right. At her beautiful townhouse that she had before him.
Yes.
Detectives went down to speak to him in Palm Beach and they put him through a polygraph.
Jim Sullivan not only passes the polygraph, but there's something else. He has an alibi that puts him nearly 700 miles away from the crime scene.
He's confirmed to be in Palm Beach, 700 miles away from Atlanta.
And he passes a polygraph for whatever it's worth.
And I'm like, I still don't like it.
Yeah.
I still don't like
it. But, like, my whole thing is, like, nobody thinks he did it. Like, I hate it when these documentaries give us the 10 minutes of, like, he's got a solid alibi. Nobody thinks he did it. We all think he hired somebody to do it.
Because he has the money.
Exactly.
And he's a fucking piece of shit.
Right.
So Jim is so cooperative with the police. He actually gives them a name.
Yes.
Their close personal friend, Marvin Marable, who's here with us. And let me tell you, dear listener, this shit gets messy.
Yes.
So messy, so fast. And Marvin's not being totally honest with
us. No, the first thing that Marvin Marable said, he was interviewed for the Palm Beach section, and he goes, they were barely rich for Palm Beach.
Marvin, you better watch it.
Because I know. This gets, oh, God damn it, it gets messy.
Now, when Lita was murdered, her best friend Poppy was in the house.
Yes.
And so Poppy is this guy Marvin's wife.
Yes.
And so Marvin says, look, It got to the point where Lita's awful marriage had an effect on my marriage. He paints this picture of these two women, Lita and Poppy, sort of commiserating about their marriages. Or maybe what he's trying to say is that Lita, she was talking so much shit about her marriage to Poppy that she inspired Poppy to get a divorce from this guy, Marvin.
Right.
Now, I'm like, wait a second.
That's not how it happened.
He doesn't explain how or why one divorce has to do with the other.
Right.
But in the middle of Lita really going through this abusive relationship and trying to get out of it and talking to her best friend, Poppy files for her own divorce.
Right. Right.
And so Marvin's like, not on my watch.
So then you decided to try something a little questionable after that.
You know, I have a background in law enforcement. I don't see it as questionable. It's your own telephone in your own house. I put a recorder on the, people call it a tap on the phone, and I started recording conversations.
In the house phone.
Mm-hmm.
Marvin starts recording conversations on his own telephone in his own house, specifically to see what these two women are up to.
Now, he does it in secret. He used to work in law enforcement or whatever, so he knows how to tap his own phone in a way that they won't see.
And what he does is he records more than 300 hours of just conversations between Lita and Poppy.
Yeah.
And Marvin, you freaking narc, he goes right to Jim, the husband.
Exactly.
And tells him everything Lita was planning. Now, excuse me, she's in an abusive relationship. She's trying to get out, and you give, like Marvin, you give this guy all of this ammunition to use against her. She's already in an unsafe situation.
It also gets off the rails so fast because he can't just call Jim and be like, here's all the dirt that might help you in your divorce settlement against your wife. I'm going to fly to Palm Beach under an assumed name. Like, what? Like, the high drama of the unnecessary high drama of
it. I just can't believe that Marvin, a black man who knew everything that Lita had gone through, is now giving this piece of shit white guy ammunition and putting Lita in very real danger.
Yeah, and it just seems like he's blaming Lita for his own marriage falling apart, so he's trying to get back at her.
And so now,
something tells me Marvin doesn't like to take a look in the mirror.
No,
do you know what I mean?
Because now it's like the two shitty husbands versus the soon-to-be ex-wives.
Yes.
And now everything's a mess. And Jim's like, no, Marvin, girl, keep recording. I'll pay you $30,000.
Because Marvin says
Like, girl, I'll do it for free.
He goes down to Palm Beach to like tell Jim all the dirt that Lita's saying about him. And then he's like, but I'm going to stop recording. No, you didn't, girl.
No.
You're looking for an excuse for why, when James was like, keep recording and I'll pay you 30. Like, why you let him pay you to keep recording your wife in secret.
But however, because these women are smart and these men are dumb.
Yes.
Just a few days after Marvin and Jim's secret meeting at Casa Elita,
Poppy and Lita somehow discovered the recording device.
How did they react?
It wasn't nice.
It wasn't nice.
No, she speeds up her divorce process.
Yes.
Good.
Yeah,
she files for divorce the very next day. Good. Can you imagine?
Oh, God.
And they report Marvin to the cops, and he's charged with possession of an eavesdropping device.
Which I'd never heard of before.
You piece of shit.
Possession of an eavesdropping device.
Like,
I love it.
I don't understand what doing this to Lita was, how it would help him in
I
any
know.
Way.
You're but he's trying to make money. He's selling information to James.
But how it started, like, Marvin, what was your thought process of like, wow, this woman's really suffering and my wife is there for her. Let me record them.
Uh-huh.
Like, in what world would you betray your wife and her best friend?
He's leaving out how shitty he knew his marriage was. He knew his wife was talking shit about. Like, I don't think these two, Poppy and Marvin, slept in the same bedroom maybe ever. You know what I mean?
But, like, for him to sit here and be like, yeah, well.
I know.
Like, for him to say earlier, Lita was such a gem. And then to put her in very real danger and conspire against both of these women? Like,
I know.
Marvin.
I know. He's the worst.
How dare you sit there with a straight face and say this to me?
Well, especially because Jim throws Marvin right under the bus. Because remember how Jim was being so helpful?
Well, this is perfect. So Marvin's shitty behavior is actually perfect for Jim.
Yes.
Because when Jim tells this to the cops, of course they're going to look at Marvin.
He literally says, you should look at Marvin. All I know is that he's been recording phone calls on his wife.
And she's getting a divorce too. And I don't know if shit's bad. Like, this was perfect for Jim. Like, Marvin, what were you thinking?
But more to the point, Marvin, why are you here? Why are you sitting down and telling
like,
us this story?
You know you're being recorded. We can see you, Marvin. Like, are you serious?
I want a t-shirt that says, we can see you,
we
Marvin.
We can see you, Marvin.
I know. Why these people sit down.
What is wrong with these men?
I know. They sit down to tell a story in which they only look terrible. Why?
It's like when the lie also makes them look bad.
Right.
When this happens all the time, where it's like, no, I couldn't have killed her because I was cheating on her. Like,
right.
Yeah. Even the lie to save your own ass is bad.
You know what I wake up in the middle of the night laughing about sometimes?
What?
When you do the actress.
What?
When you do the...
Oh, no, I'm scared. I never know what it's going to be.
When you do the actress in those Chris Hansen videos, when she's like...
Oh, would you bring the condoms? Cool, I'm just taking all my clothes off. I'll be right there. I just celebrated my 14th birthday. As she's inching back.
Oh,
she
my
never,
God.
You never see her.
I
you
know.
Only see her.
Totally. You brought the condoms?
You brought the condoms in the porn, right? Okay, cool.
I have to finish my 8th grade science fair project,
I'm just going to get some high C and I'll be right back. Just get some Hawaiian punch, which is delicious, by the way. Let's not talk any shit
about
Hawaiian punch.
But it's also the way that you exit the scene because you always turn with your back. With, like you say it over your
shoulder. I'll be right back. No, just you take your clothes off too. Hold on. Like Chris Hansen, why don't you have a seat?
And they always do. They always have the seat.
Except you know? That guy who ran.
I know.
And it did not end well.
Oh,
that
God.
Episode has been scrubbed from the internet.
Is that
so, yes. Here's the thing. Marvin is questioned by police. He's 100% a suspect because he is, like, doing all these shitty things. But there's no evidence he's involved in Lita's death.
He didn't do this.
He just killed his own marriage.
Right. He's just an asshole, but he didn't do this.
Like, so, but nothing is happening. The case is going cold. Months and months are going by.
Yeah.
No leads are panning out. And Lita's parents, of course, have made this case their whole life.
Yeah.
This was like their pride and joy, and they hated this guy on site, and now something happened to her, and they know he had something to do with it,
yeah.
And nothing's going on.
They keep ruling out suspects. We learn about this guy named Bob Daniel. He was a suitor of Lita's. We learn that like a few months before the murder, he had come to Lita's house in a drunken rage and smashed his car into the garage.
What an asshole.
Like, smashed his car into the garage.
And as the cops were taking him away, he said, I'm going to kill that. So, serious red flag.
But that lead didn't go anywhere either.
Bob had just had quadruple bypass surgery. You know, the police ultimately decided that Bob had nothing to do with it.
He couldn't have done it because he just had quadruple bypass surgery. So this rules him out. To which I said, is everybody okay?
No.
What is
the answer
wrong
is no.
with everybody?
No one is okay.
Nobody is
okay. Especially the men. No one is okay. Like,
I know.
Major walking violent red flag, but didn't kill her. But like, did
I
he
know.
Maybe kill, like, is everyone else around him okay?
I
because
know.
If this is how he behaves, like, are any of his ex-wives or girlfriends all right?
Like, are any of them missing?
Like, what is going on?
I know.
So now these two veteran detectives are assigned to the case. Lieutenant Walker, they call Billy D. Williams.
Oh,
detective
right.
Harris, they call Columbo. And the guy says, the dogged, disheveled detective of television fame. Can I say something?
Please.
He's a lieutenant. Columbo's a lieutenant. He's Lieutenant Columbo, okay? He's not
yeah.
a detective, he's
yeah.
a lieutenant.
Okay, yep, yep.
I just want to say
and
that.
And I feel like even I know, because they call him lieutenant, don't they?
He introduces himself. Hi, I'm Lieutenant Columbo.
Right.
And when they're annoyed at him,
uh-huh.
they're annoyed, oh, the lieutenant's here.
Uh-huh.
It's very L.T. Columbo.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
You know who I had to correct about that?
Who?
Steve. Because in one of our Mad Libs that Steve did, or like a crossword puzzle
oh,
or something,
no.
one of my notes, because Steve sent it, like, what do you guys think? And I was like, everything's great. He's not a TV detective.
Oh,
he's
no.
a lieutenant. And Steve was like, oh, okay. And then the next time he did it again. And I was like, I know this is a me thing. But
no, but
he's a lieutenant.
Listen, Steve is a New York Times crossword puzzle person. He does it in pen 5 days a week. Like, he should know better.
He should know.
Yeah.
And it's Columbo. He's famous. He's amazing. He's very
yeah.
good at this. He doesn't carry a gun. He
We're giving
need
Steve
it.
A lot of shit today.
I
love you, honey.
But I said it very nicely, and I was like, he's
you
just a lieutenant.
Because you only know how to say things
he's
nicely.
He's just a lieutenant.
I know.
He's a lieutenant. And all he does is get shitty rich white people without a gun. He doesn't need it. He's too good. So anyway, Harris and Walker are on the case.
Yes.
And we learn these roses are very important.
The roses found at the crime scene, because remember, she opened the door because somebody was delivering her flowers.
And two bullets went through the box of roses.
Yes.
So they track down where they were purchased. It's the Botany Bay Flower Shop.
Right.
And the employee says some guy comes in at 8 a.m., bought the roses, paid in cash, left in a small car.
The florist gave a description of the man buying the flowers and another man who was waiting in the car.
So detectives know they're looking for at least two men.
Until yet another person is described to police, that flower delivery man who had looked Lita's neighbor right in the eye.
So the neighbor, remember the neighbor called 911 and I was like, he's going to be very important.
Yes.
He says, well, the guy who delivered the flowers was a middle-aged white guy. Dear listener, we have three men.
Yeah.
None of them are Jim the husband. None of them look alike.
Right. And we have sketches of all of them. That's how we know that they're three different people.
Right. Three separate people are being described. None of them are Jim the husband.
Yeah.
So the cops are like, this is clearly a murder for hire plot. And
right.
I'm
it
like,
must be.
I'm like, whoever planned this is an idiot.
Right.
Keep
they
it simple,
always
stupid.
Are. Right.
Three people means there's a bigger chance of tracking one of you down or one of you is going to talk. Why couldn't the guy who bought the roses also be the driver, also be the shooter? I'm not telling you how to do your shitty plans,
right.
But like, great. Why are 15 people involved in this?
I know. But also, why can't we get the guys at this point?
I mean, please.
You know what I mean?
Brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever think about switching insurance companies to see if you could save some cash? Progressive makes it easy. Just drop in some details about yourself and see if you're eligible to save money when you bundle your home and auto policies. The process only takes minutes and it could mean hundreds more in your pocket. Visit Progressive.com after this episode to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
So it's 1988. It's a year later. By the 1 year anniversary, there are still no suspects. But then they get the husband. They get the husband's phone records. And they can see that the day of the murder, about an hour after the murder happened, there was a collect phone call to Jim's home in Palm Beach.
And it was made from a payphone about 30 miles away from Lita's house.
Yes.
And it's done call.
Right.
Right. So.
Exactly.
But here's the thing. This call was made in one state and it was made to someone in another state. So
yes.
That now means the FBI is involved.
Yay.
Please welcome FBI Special Agent John Kingston.
Hi, John Kingston.
He is obsessed with the phone calls.
Oh, well, it's kind of amazing. So they get the phone records for 6 months before the murder and 6 months after. And they see 3 days before the murder, Jim called Lita's neighbor. This story is so weird.
Sullivan said, had he seen anything suspicious around Lita's townhouse?
And Buff finds it strange. He hasn't talked to Jim in over a year.
Anything weird going on at Lita's house? Have you noticed anything strange happening around there lately?
What? Why are you asking me? Also, I haven't spoken to you in a year. Also, we're not friends.
But also,
why are you asking me?
But he tells the FBI there actually was something weird that happened.
So here, that same day, which is 3 days before Lita was killed, someone pounds on Lita's door at 5 a.m. and she doesn't answer. Thank you, Bob, the neighbor, for that
information. Also, these idiot hitmen, like you're
5
banging on a door
no
at 5
in the
morning. Like, what is wrong with you?
Now, that same day, again, 3 days before the murder, the pounding on the door at 5 a.m., Jim, the husband, calls a Howard Johnson's motel like a few miles away from Lita's house.
And they're like, we know he's not staying at a hojo, so what's going on here?
FBI John goes to Howard Johnson's to dig deeper.
And I gotta tell you, having worked at hotels, my hat is off to these hotel people who kept all these records.
I can't believe it.
Because this was before computers, so this is all paper.
Right.
That they've organized neatly.
This is so crazy. So FBI John goes down there and he finds that there were three individuals staying there, and they received this phone call from Jim.
Yes.
John pulls out, he goes, oh, watch this, 2020, Deborah Roberts. He leans over off camera and pulls out a copy of the form from Howard Johnson's. FBI John came with props.
This happened in 1988.
He's so
2025.
Proud. Actual literal receipts.
I know.
He's like, look at it.
Yeah.
Now, the room is under the name Johnny Fur with two R's.
Yes.
And this form confirms that three people checked in. It also has the car they drove, which is a 1985 Toyota with North Carolina plates. Now, answer me this.
Yes.
Why do they have all of that information on this
because
receipt?
Because you have to put your license plate information so that they don't have your car towed. So that people are parking at the Howard Johnson's to go to the grocery store or whatever. So that's a pretty standard hotel thing.
Oh, so it's like, only patrons of Howard Johnson can...
Yeah.
Understood. Okay, great. That makes complete sense. Also, it doesn't matter because we're going to get these guys from this piece of paper. So I don't really care why we have it, but we have it.
We're going to kind of get them from this piece of paper,
kind
but not
of.
Before North Carolina shuts the whole thing
not
down.
Not all of them,
least. Know.
So these records are, remember, from January 13th, 3 days before Lita was murdered.
Yeah.
The same day as the pounding on the door, the same day as that weird call from the husband to the neighbor.
What I believe it to be is the killers having come down 3 days before the actual murder was committed, knocking on her door, her not answering it, and them having to stop and regroup and figure out what plan B is going to be.
The 5 a.m. visit was plan A.
Exactly.
She didn't answer the door.
Yep.
the Howard Johnson's little conversation was figuring out a plan B.
Long story short, they're trying to track down this Johnny Fur guy. There's a bunch of them in North Carolina.
FBI John goes, I'm in love with this registration card. It becomes a focal point of my life for the next several months. Yes. FBI John, I believe you. He's like, do you see it?
I know.
Do you want to zoom in on the form?
I know.
It
really Very organized.
This form really means a lot to me. Can you please zoom in on it, 2020? I don't know. I'm asking you one thing.
Do one little thing.
I don't even care about the lighting. I don't even care. Can you just focus on the form? It means everything to me.
But it's so frustrating because he's FBI. The local North Carolina FBI has to say, yes, you can come down here and like look for this guy. And North Carolina FBI says no.
John cannot wait to get down to North Carolina and get the son of a bitch.
I know.
And North Carolina puts a stop to it.
They literally say, we'll take it from here. They don't.
Because John's like, and there goes my case. Yep. Like, the case is dead.
And then he gets reassigned, and like that whole, like this one agent who's about to get the guy, it's all over.
North Carolina, two things. One, can you calm the fuck down? And two, can you do the right thing? Like, why are you pumping the brakes on
this? I know.
It makes no sense.
I agree.
But it really.
Raleigh, I'll see you in a couple weeks. Be nice.
Oh, well, you know. Hopefully you learned from this.
Exactly.
So meanwhile, husband Jim and girlfriend Suki are living it up in Palm Beach.
Oh, I hate them.
And they get married 8 months after Lita's murder.
Yes.
And they were already dating while Jim was married to Lita.
The bra that broke the camel's bed.
I mean, enough.
I mean,
enough, Deb. I get it, but like, please. So they're going to parties. They're buying whatever. They're living it up at that house. And one day.
Oh, this is so good.
This idiot.
I know. It always comes down to some fucking traffic situation.
I know.
They're so dumb.
He's driving his Rolls Royce.
I know.
And gets into a car accident and ends up in traffic court.
Yes.
This guy immediately blames Suki, the wife.
Yes.
Immediately.
And the idiot judge just believes him, throws the whole case out.
However, the cop who was on the scene catches wind and he says Suki wasn't even in the car that day. It was Jim driving alone. So now Jim has perjured himself, as has Suki.
Jim and Suki have both perjured themselves.
Correct.
So.
Because Suki takes the fall.
Of course she does.
Yeah.
So Jim is convicted of perjury, gets a year probation, and now he's on house arrest. Suki also gets a year of probation. She's freaking out.
She leaves his
She files for divorce.
Oh, bye.
Bye. But because this guy's
She's like sugar and spicy. Don't you remember?
Like, whatever. But because this guy's such a nightmare, the divorce goes to trial and it's the talk of the town.
Well, because Suki is suing him for alimony. That's what the trial is about.
Because I'm sure she had to sign some stupid piece of paper giving everything up too.
Exactly. And like this idiot, we're going to learn that he told her all of his secrets. You're going to let her get on this, give her whatever she wants.
And no one is thinking two steps ahead.
I know.
Because Suki's
He's like,
testifying.
I'm going to have this hair forever.
Like, please. No, you're not, you asshole. Suki's testifying. We have video of this. On the stand,
yeah.
Suki says that Jim, the husband, told her that he hired someone to kill Lita.
Like, how did you not know that she was going to tell that? Like, of course that was going to happen.
More than that, this weirdly did not help her in the divorce settlement because the judge ruled in favor of Jim across the board.
What is wrong with our justice?
Wrong?
I know. You're right. She literally solves Lita's murder, still gets nothing in the divorce.
Like, what? Men, can we just get rid of most of you, please, God? We would be so much better
off.
What
if it was just like, and I was just gone?
The amount of things that we could get done and we could fix.
I know,
and
but I
want
to live on that planet, too.
Can we just do it first and then you will be invited just depending
but
on...
But that's what you're going to tell all of us.
Yes.
You know what I mean? But you're never sending for us. That's never happening.
Well, wait a second.
Okay.
I have to confirm. I have to figure out with all the other women.
Okay, great.
I'm not making this decision by myself.
Great.
But I'll bring it up at the meeting.
Okay.
I will get back to you.
Great.
But I think everyone will agree.
Yeah.
Can we just hit reset and start
but
fresh
I'm
and
saying,
then we'll see how it
as
goes.
As Mike and Steve and I are getting onto the spaceship,
sure.
We know you're not sending for us.
Well.
We know you're not. I'm just letting you know.
Live your life like you want to be sent for.
Okay.
On this new planet that we are. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Would this get me invited? Or would it not? Live your life as if we're all watching and keeping track.
Because you know you've set up that planet with fucking cameras. Like, there's,
Are you kidding?
Totally.
We're watching you and we're keeping track of everything.
So live your life like you want to be sent for.
Like you want to be invited to the good planet. Let us work on it.
Okay. Yeah.
And then we'll see. So just say, should I?
The motto of Earth is like planet Earth where the toilet seat is always down.
Mm-hmm.
I love it.
And then some.
And
like, the toilet seat's the least of our worries, honestly.
Oh,
so there
God.
You go. So right. Here's the thing. The FBI raids Jim's house.
Jim, now a convicted felon, has guns in the house. Of course, you're not allowed to have guns if you're a convicted felon. So they put together a sweeping affidavit to get a search warrant.
We did see a number of guns loaded into a car and this box carried out.
When they found the guns, he was in violation of his probation, and so he went to jail for 9 months.
So he goes away for 9 months on the stupid fucking gun charge.
We got one thing in the gun world, right? I guess.
I guess.
The one thing.
I guess.
We did it.
So it's January 1992.
Yes.
They have been building the case against Jim. The statute of limitations is about to be up.
Now, 5 days from now.
Here's what I learned.
Yeah.
It's a five-year statute of limitation on murder for hire cases in 1992. That all changed in 1994.
Oh.
Effective September 13th, 1994, a murder for hire that results in a death is not subject to a statute of limitations.
Thank God. What is the statute? Why do we have a statute of limitations?
I know.
This is ridiculous.
But it took till 1994. So 1992, they only had 5 years to convict them.
Yeah.
So that's the clock they're racing against right now. So the clock is ticking. And we don't know who these other three guys are. The guy who bought the flowers, the guy who delivered the flowers, and the guy who drove, the guy who killed Lita.
Right.
Also, this couldn't be all one person, Jim. Like, okay.
I know. So, he's got money to burn.
And again,
you know what I mean?
When I say those things, you know I'm not like,
no, we're not rooting for
it.
No,
I'm just saying, like,
we're pointing out how stupid they are.
Everyone. Yeah. Keep it up.
Keep it up. Yeah.
So they have 5 days before this expiration date, and they're like, you know what? Fuck it. Let's just go to trial.
Yeah.
Let's just see what we can do.
Yeah. So November 2nd, 1992, first day of trial. It's in federal court, so there's no cameras. You know, and Jim's got all the money, and this is pointed out for us. He's got money, he's white, and he's got the best lawyers in the country, they literally say.
Right. And he's indicted for the murder for hire plot against his wife, Lita McClinton, using interstate phone calls.
Yes.
So it's all about what FBI John was uncovering.
If the mail doesn't fuck you, it's going to be the phone.
You know what I mean?
You know?
Especially now.
I said, oh my God, Suki's back for round two. We told that her testimony is full of bombshells, but we are not told what they are.
We don't know what they are because as the prosecutors are arguing the case, weeks are going by.
The judge says I'm forced to dismiss this case for lack of evidence.
Judge Marvin Shoup ruled that, in effect, even if Sullivan may have been involved in the murder for hire, the government fell short in proving the phone calls related to the murder.
And then he looks at Jim and he says, you've been acquitted.
The judge is, quote, forced to dismiss the case due to lack of evidence. Thank you.
What the hell?
Like, what the hell?
The judge is here being like, I really didn't want to do that. And we're like, but you know that you're the one in charge
of
this.
But you did it.
Yeah, exactly.
You're like, I didn't want to do it. But
you know what? Get him on the spaceship. No one is sending for that
guy. I didn't want to do it, but there was a rich white guy in front of me. My hands were tied.
With that head of hair.
I had to let him go.
I had to let him go.
It was the death of a black woman.
I know.
And there was a rich white guy. Mm-hmm. My hands were tied.
What would you do?
I had to let him go.
What would you do?
Between a rock and a hard place. Do you see what I'm saying? I had to let him go. He killed a black woman. There was nothing I could do.
There was nothing I could do.
So the husband is a fucking free man. Lita's family is devastated. The system has let them down once again.
Yeah. They file a wrongful death suit in like a civil court in Florida and they win a $4 million judgment. He's able to hide his assets so they get no money. Can we do something
like they
about
always do?
But I mean,
OJ did the same thing.
There's got to be a way we can fix that. There has to be a way.
I know. Like how he can now hide all his assets.
I'm thinking about all the things you all are going to get done when we're gone. That's going to be like on the top 10.
Got away with it too. Like,
I know.
Fuck that.
Yeah.
No, we'll take care of it. We have a long list. Everyone's up for it though, right, girlies? We can do it. Come on, don't fail me now, right?
Okay.
So this sucks. Jim is not held accountable for anything.
Yeah.
He got away with planning Lita's murder and all the other abusive shit that he's done until it's 1998. It's 11 years after Lita's murder.
Oh my God. Come through Beaumont, Texas.
Belinda Trahan is here. She lives 700 miles away.
I love
Belinda,
her.
She has a story. She has a boyfriend named Tony.
Yeah, Belinda and Tony live together in Albemarle, North Carolina. If that sounds familiar, it's because that's where that FBI guy was trying to go to find the guy.
And North Carolina said, nope.
No, thank you. This guy, Tony's a long-haul truck driver. So she works for an attorney, this Belinda woman. And she tells this attorney.
Belinda tells her boss about a time that Tony came home from a long-haul trucking trip and said that a rich white man in Florida offered to pay him to, quote, take care of his black wife in Georgia.
To, quote, take care of his black wife in Georgia.
Belinda's like, I'm sorry, what?
Belinda didn't believe it. She's like, no. You've been gone. You've been traveling. Like, you met another woman.
You're cheating on me.
You're absolutely cheating on
me. And I just want to be clear, Tony drives a moving truck.
Right.
That's important.
Yes, yes. But then Tony takes her to meet this rich white guy in a diner somewhere.
He's like, no, I'm not cheating on you. Why don't you come meet the man who's going to pay me to kill his black wife?
Right, exactly.
Are the words Tony said to Belinda. And she's like, okay.
Belinda goes to the Waffle House.
She goes to the diner. And Belinda's like, I watched the rich white guy hand my boyfriend a stack of cash.
But it's like, what's his name? James? What are you doing?
What are you doing?
Now you've got another witness watching you pay this man to kill your wife. Yeah. What is going on?
This is a
on?
Desperate man.
Or a man who thinks he can get away with anything.
That too. So Belinda's like, okay, I'm bailing. She leaves Tony. She leaves North Carolina. She moves to Texas.
That's where she meets the attorney who she tells this story to.
Because 11 years go by. She doesn't tell him the story right away.
Right.
11 years go by. And the ex-boyfriend randomly reaches out to Belinda. Hey, like, it's been a long time. Do you want to meet me at this nearby truck stop?
Where and there's she's no like, witnesses and nobody can hear you scream.
And she's like, no.
And
she's too scared to go. So she tells her boss, a lawyer, the whole story. The boss connects Belinda to the feds. Bada bing, bada boom. Here we are.
The feds show up at Belinda's house. The name Belinda, I could never stop saying it.
Know,
what a,
so
what a great name.
It's
Jesus.
Great name.
They show up at Belinda's house with a photo lineup. It takes her 3 seconds to tap her little pinky pink fingernail.
That's another Deb quote.
Yeah, totally. On Jim Sullivan's face.
And he's the guy who paid the ex-boyfriend.
Yes.
The feds set up a wire and they record conversations between Belinda and her ex, Tony.
Right.
And Tony spills it all.
Yeah.
He tells Belinda everything on these recorded calls.
Yes.
Plus, the FBI finds proof that Tony, the ex, delivered furniture to Jim Sullivan 3 months before the murder, so they knew each other.
That's how they were connected. But the FBI calls the trucking company that he worked for. He's like, any chance you got your records from 11 years ago? He's like, I sure do, girl.
Of course I do.
People used to keep great records before computers, apparently.
I know.
My God.
Here's a pro tip. You can keep records on a computer, too.
I don't know that that's true. I'm not
makes me
really
crazy. You don't have any backups of anything.
But we're doing good. That's only ever bit us in the ass 4 or 5 or 7 times.
You want to know why? Because I have them all. Because they exist somewhere.
I could probably find my notes now for like the last 4 years or so. But like if we needed my notes on the catfish documentary, I probably couldn't find them.
Oh, I got mine. I can pull them up for you right now.
Oh, my God. Yeah. They should be in a museum somewhere.
No, that's so funny. So this is perfect, though. There's a paper trail, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Tony the ex tells the feds, okay, fine. I took $25,000 from Jim, but I did not pull the trigger, but I was also there.
This has been on his conscience forever. When the feds knocked on his door, he's like, I've been waiting for you guys for a long time. He wants to unburden himself of this.
Right. Now, he's the hitman.
Yes.
He's saying that he's not, but
yeah, of
he
course.
Incriminates himself.
Yeah.
So the cops arrest him for Lita's murder. He just keeps talking. He knows too much, and they arrest him for the murder.
Now, they, at the same time, issue a warrant for James Sullivan, the husband, who obviously paid for this. The guy fucking takes off.
Yeah, it's April 1998, he's gone.
Yeah.
He runs. He's gone for years.
He had a home in Costa Rica where he went, then he flies to Panama. Then from Panama, he, like, nobody knows where he went.
Then he's been missing for so long. He's on the top 10 most wanted list. He's on America's Most Wanted.
Yeah.
A man sees America's Most Wanted on television and goes, I know that guy. He lives in my condo complex in Chiam, Thailand.
That's my neighbor.
I know. In Thailand.
Calls America's Most Wanted. The husband is finally extradited in 2004. This was 1998.
I mean, America's Most Wanted is going to get you every time. Why is that show not still on the air?
But it takes forever.
I know.
Because the phone call comes in 1998. By 2004, he's extradited.
And I mean, she died. She was murdered in 1987. Yes.
Oh my God.
Oh, wait, 1987, right.
He gets off the plane. He's wearing one shoe because he has gout so bad.
Which, meanwhile, we're covering that other documentary about the cult.
The culture scene, Little Miss Innocent, where nobody had
Get
gout.
Get the guy some culture scene.
Nobody had gout.
I know.
So anyway, the trial, after nearly 20 years, and Clint, the prosecutor, is like, can I talk about the puzzles again?
Oh, God.
Because this is all about putting all these puzzle pieces together.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
He's rich. He's white. He's gotten away with everything. His lawyers are amazing. And we're like, shit, this does not look good.
Yes.
So the jury, we learn 9 women, 3 men. We learn that the jury is racially mixed.
Yes.
We have a lot of people testifying. We have the phone records. We have that receipt that FBI John loves from Howard Johnson with the car license plate and all that.
Belinda and Tony testify. They're like the star witnesses.
Right. And Belinda says something, talk about haunting for the rest of your life.
Because what happened was, Tony is, when he's trying to convince her that he's been hired to kill this woman and she doesn't believe
again,
him.
No, I'm not cheating on
right.
you. I was hired to kill this a black woman.
Yeah. And he's like, we knocked on the door like yesterday and she didn't answer. And Belinda's like, well, you're such a dummy. She's not trying to help him. She just doesn't believe this is real.
Yeah.
I said, just don't even lie to me. I said, because anyone knows that if you wanted to get a woman to answer the door, all you would have to do is take flowers to the door.
And so Belinda unwittingly gave them the tool to get Lita to answer the door.
Right. And so this is like a very gaspable moment because it proves that they used Belinda's, for lack of a better term, like advice.
Yeah. And, you know, they make it very clear that it was she did not do that on purpose. She was not trying to help them.
No. Yeah. But Clint, the puzzle loving lawyer, brings the actual booth from the actual diner.
Oh, my God.
Into the courtroom. And I'm like, OK, I love this. I love the theater. But like that poor diner.
I know.
Did the lawyers pay for that? Did they replace the booth?
There's a lot of theatrics in the closing arguments. The defense attorney is trying to show that there's no way the $25,000 Tony was paid could fit into
the envelope.
So he's trying to literally, like, if the money doesn't fit, you must acquit.
Oh my God.
You know what I mean?
So Belinda identifies Jim Sullivan. Fine. Tony, the boyfriend, gets up there to testify.
Yeah.
Clint, the lawyer, has him stand up and act out what Jim Sullivan said to him. He's taking his glasses. This man is in character. He's like doing a voice. His posture changes. And Tony's like, I signed the motel receipt. I bought the flowers. I made the collab. He did everything but kill Lita.
Exactly.
Bullshit.
Yeah.
And the defense doesn't ask him a single question.
No. And that's the thing that, like, he's a guy that, like, they could have assassinated his character on the stand all day.
He did it already, I think.
I guess that's true.
So by the time we're at closing arguments, Clint, the theater kid, like, girl, I know you love puzzles, but you also love theater,
love
my friend.
Love you in Godspell, girl.
Because he has an actual doorbell.
Oh, my God. So he's got the doorbell. Because remember, they rang the doorbell. Lita answered the door. They want the jury to feel what Lita felt when they're hearing the doorbell.
This, like, ordinary sound.
But also learned that the husband who hired the killer loved the book For Whom the Bell Tolls. So he starts shouting at the jury.
I am going to ask you through your verdict of guilty to each and every count to tell James Vincent Sullivan for whom the bell tolls. Tell him that it tolls for thee.
Then Clint looks directly at him and he points and he goes, for you. And I'm like, yes,
Clint. And he says
Clint,
it three times.
For you.
I'm sure it was effective in the courtroom. I'm watching it like, this is a bit over the top.
And
even
then he rings the doorbell three times.
I know.
The bell is tolling. But like, I understand partially why he's doing this, because he knows he's up against a rich white guy.
Yes.
And it's the murder of a black woman. And he is doing everything he can to show these people, give them as many visuals, whether it's the diner or the doorbell or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Clint, I know you're a puzzle guy, but you're playing a lot of chess here, and I love it. Theatrical chess, the best. So the jury is deliberating, and everyone's a wreck, because they're like, is he going to get away with it again?
Again.
Like, he's gotten away with everything his whole life. The other case was thrown out.
And he was, like, on the run for 10 years or whatever. Like, but the case goes to the jury. They come back in a few hours. It's the same day, and he's guilty.
And this is where, fuck this guy. So he has life in prison without the possibility of parole. But did you catch this? As they're talking about this, we're like, now, the entire time that Clint, the lawyer, is with Deborah Roberts, he's doing a puzzle.
Yeah.
And we finally, like, pan out, and the puzzle that Clint has been working on this whole time is Lady Justice.
Yes.
And I'm like, I understand that after all this time, Lita's family just got something, but I'm like, Lady Justice needs a lot of work.
I don't know
if the current justice is invited to my planet.
No.
We need to burn the whole thing down.
That's no question.
Yeah.
No question.
But it's going to be a lady again.
Yeah. You're never sending for us. We're just going to starve at that planet.
Live your life.
Like you want to be
like
sent for.
Like you just want to get there.
I know. So he gets life without the possibility of parole. Tony Harwood, we believe the killer, was released after his 20 years. Sullivan remains behind bars to this day.
Yeah. And Yvette, Lita's friend, because Deborah Roberts is like, why do you think this took 20 years? And she's like, I got two words for you, Deb. White privilege.
Yes.
He was rich. He was white. And she says he knew how to manipulate people and he had resources to do that.
Yes.
And Clint's like, and I have to say, race always permeates a case.
Yeah.
And it definitely did in this case. And it ends with Deb, the author, saying this really beautiful thing about Lita.
This is a woman who you never met. I've never met. Most of the people involved in this case never met her. And yet her life really made an impact. When somebody dies in this kind of manner, they don't stop being a member of the family. They don't stop being a member of the community. They never stop mattering.
People don't ever stop mattering.
Yes.
And like, it was this really beautiful way to end this, because we also, like, we don't, there were three guys there. We only have Tony. We don't know anything else.
They're not even looking for the other two.
Like, they just sort of ended the case. And so now Lita's family has to sort of deal with, like, okay, I guess it's now about Lita and her impact and her memory.
Yeah.
And how she still matters and not the rest of the details of this case, which is fucking crazy and unfair.
And unfair.
Lady Justice, how dare you?
How dare you?
I would like a word.
Ha 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 ha.
Oh, girl, we did a puzzling murder from 2020?
Yeah, it's season 47, episode 6.
I love Deborah Roberts. I love, love her.
And I love so many of the cases that she covers on 2020 are so personal to her.
Yes.
So she really has like a really special voice in these stories. So.
Yeah. Fam, don't forget, we are starting a Discord. I almost forgot what it's called.
Yeah. Yes.
So there's a link in the show notes right now. There's a link to everything, the Facebook group, all of our social media, the Discord. Join the Discord. We're going to be in there. I can't wait to sort of learn this new world.
Yeah,
it's going to be so fun.
It's not replacing. We're just adding it.
Exactly.
So Facebook is still there. Everything is still there. Yep. But this is just a little alternative if you're into that kind of thing.
And especially if you want to join the book club, that's going to be starting to be managed through there. Sasha's going to manage it in a bunch of ways. You don't have to join Discord to be in the book club. We've got a couple hundred, like 500 people in the book club.
Yeah, because the book club is everywhere.
It's everywhere.
It's not like not in Facebook.
No.
It's not on Discord.
But there
it's
everywhere. The thing about Discord is that there will be a special channel for the book so you can continue the conversation there easier than you can in the Facebook group.
Got it.
Is all I'm saying.
Okay.
What are we doing next?
Oh, girl, Lisa Frank.
Oh.
We're doing that Lisa Frank doc. So it's on Amazon Prime. It's 4 episodes. We're doing that thing where we do it in 2.
We're talking about gay stickers. Like, that's what we're doing.
Oh, my God. Rainbow stickers, Lisa Frank. Also, Sandy Lion. Were you a Sandy Lion girly?
I don't know anything about Lisa Frank. So, watching the documentary on behalf, I messed this up, fam.
You fucked it up. I specifically asked you not to fuck me on something.
And I did. It's why I'm going to that other planet, and I'm not going to be sent for. Anyway, the way we're doing it is it's 4 episodes. We're doing it in 2. Mm-hmm. 2 episodes at 1, and then 2 episodes in the... Anyway, you know how.
Whatever. And if not, we'll explain it at the top of the episode.
Okay,
but Lisa Frank, my sticker girlies, let's go.
Oh, my God.
All right,
well, stay tuned for the trailer for that. And we love y'all.
We love you. See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Lisa Frank's art have this nostalgia.
An explosion of color.
Happy. Magical. The cutest thing you've ever seen.
Lisa Frank's story started with a dream that grew into a phenomenon.
Rainbows, unicorns.
The art defined an entire generation. And she became known as the mastermind of an iconic brand.
At one point, they were making a reported $66 million a year.
But behind the colorful brand, you know, things got very, very dark.
How can something that created so much happiness go so wrong?
There's a scary side to the Lisa Frank story.
Not everything was rainbows and unicorns.
Oh, it's a rainbow roller coaster, to say the very least.
It felt like management by fear. Walk around on eggshells.
They just took such advantage of us.
Who's going to survive till next week?
Absolute power corrupts absolutely.
They say you should never meet your idols, and it's true.